We saw 2 days ago in a parasha that we read, Parashat Vayakel. Usually it goes together, Vayakel Pikudei, unless if it's a leap year, then you need to separate between the parashiyot that we read two, because you need four extra ones, so you read them separately. But if you pay attention, it starts right away with the obligation of Shabbat. This is one of 12 times that the Torah speaks about the obligation to keep Shabbat. As a matter of fact, you ask yourself, what's the connection between Shabbat to the rest of the parasha? The rest of the two parashot, the next two parashot, it's all about the Mishkan. Prepare. The Haftara, speaking about Shlomo HaMelech, same thing. Similar, Bet HaMikdash. Okay. All of a sudden, Shabbat. Starts with Shabbat. Why? To teach that even though to build a house for Hashem, a house for God, it's such an important mitzvah, Shabbat is above it. Shabbat is above it. If you come to a person today, many not religious Jews, and you tell them we need, assuming they are very wealthy, let's say they have $100 million. And you tell them, we want to build a shul. I don't know, we name it after your father, your mother, whatever it is. You lost a son, anything. We need $1 million cash or check or $2 million, whatever. It's very common that this kind of people write a check. You tell them to keep Shabbat, they don't even want to consider it. Which mitzvah is higher? He keeps one Shabbat. It's better than his whole shul that he gave $2, $3, or $5 million. Think about it. And it's not my opinion. This is the opinion of the Torah. Chazal say, why it comes right before the explanation how to make the Mishkan, Vayakel Moshe et kol adat bnei Israel, and Moshe gathered the nation of Israel, Vayomer elem ele advarim asher tziva Hashem la'asot otam. These are the things that Hashem commanded me to teach you what to do. 6 days, all the work will get done. Everything. Every time the Torah uses the word melacha, it doesn't mean a physical hard work like some ignorant people think. That's how it means. I explain in many of my lectures that if you have a table, a big heavy table, and you have a big mansion, four different floors, and you had so many guests this Shabbat, you cannot feed them in the first floor. So some of them you had to send upstairs. There's no, the house is packed. And you don't have enough tables. And now you have to serve here, and now you have to bring the table to the fourth floor or the second floor. It doesn't matter. And the table is 1 ton. It's very, very heavy. It's heavier than a refrigerator. And you have to take it up, and then you take it down, and then you take it up again for Seudah Shlishit. You take it down. The whole Shabbat, you're a mover. You became a mover. Your back is broken. You're all sweating. You need a week to rest now. A delicate person like you, you was not Mechalel Shabbat. You take a match, you light the match, you write two letters, you're already a violator of Shabbat. So it's nothing to do with hard work like some people think. Also, the obligation to rest on Shabbat, it's true that Hashem also wanted you to rest physically. It's true. But it's definitely not the main thing. Because the obligation to rest on Shabbat, it's even for a person who does nothing all his life. If a person sleeps all day, all night, nothing he does in his life. He has servants, they do everything for him. He has a special obligation to rest on Shabbat. It's not only for the hardworking people. So every time the Torah says the word melacha, it's different than avodah. Avodah means work. Melacha means melechet machshevet asra haTorah. Not just ordinary work. A work that starts in the brain and later become action. Which means, I want to create fire, so first I know in my head, I need heat here. I want light here. What do I have to do in order for me to get light? I create fire. Or I'm freezing here, so I want to create fire to warm myself. First, I'm thinking what I need, and because of that, it creates the job. You understand? Now we're not talking ordinary jobs. How many jobs like this? How many melachot like this we have in the Torah? 39. How do we know? How do we know 39? Because in the description of Hashem to Moshe, how to make the Mishkan, he told them how to make the Mishkan. You have to make a tent, you have to take the wool, you have to sew it, it's kneading, you have to dye it in paint, you have to create the paint, you have to heat the water and then mix it with the blood of the chilazon fish. There's a list of things to do. If we count one by one, it comes to 39 different kinds of melachot. 39 melachot. 39 melachot, it's melechet machshevet, and then in the end Hashem say, all of this does not postpone Shabbat. Shabbat is above it. You should know that. And this is what it says here. The next parasha, as we started parashat Vayakel, 6 days everything you do, you have to finish. And in the 7th day, it's holy. The word kodesh. Who knows what the word kadosh means? We say it every day, kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. How many times we say kadosh in every day, you know? Huh? 3 in a kedusha, and then when you sit after Alenu Ashrei, after Kriyat HaTorah, Seuva LeTzion Goel, 3 more times, and then in Mincha 3 more times. This is if you're an ordinary Jew. What happens if you sit in yeshiva and you have next door minyanim every 15, 20 minutes? So every 20 minutes, half an hour, you stand. You have to stand. You hear it, you have to stand. Because the Torah says, "V'nikdashti betoch bnei Israel." I sanctified my name inside the nation of Israel. This is the Kedusha. So you can say hundreds of times, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. What does it mean, Kadosh? I promise you, there are people who say that a million times already and they don't know what it means, Kadosh. Who knows what Kadosh means? Holy. What holy means? What's holy? White, black, energy, purity, clean, dirty. What does it mean, holy? How you define in simple English what the word holy means?
Different.
Huh?
Different.
Different than what? So if Mustafa is different than Saeed, then it became holy? Huh? Just because it's different?
Same.
Bin Laden is a different terrorist than Arafat. They made him holy?
Same.
Some people would look at his beard, they'll think he's holy. But we're beyond that stage already, no?
Sacred.
It's true what you say, but you forgot a little bit to add more. Muvdal, it means you are different than everybody else, not just from one person and another one and another nation. We are different than everything else. We have Chol and Kodesh. Why in Hebrew, when they want to say secular Jew, they call him Chiloni? Many people think because it comes from the word Cholani. What cholani means? Someone who has a mental disease. Cholani. Could be a physical disease, or could be a mental disease. It sounds very convincing, but it's not the case. It's not the case. Because chiloni comes from the word chol. Chol means yom chol, weekdays. Not holy. Because Shabbat for them is an ordinary day, regular day, which they drive, they walk, they do whatever they want. So they automatically put themselves in a status of 7 days is weekday for me. There's no special day. Holy means muvdal, separating you from the weekdays, separating you for ordinary things to something special, special, unique. Shabbat, Shabbaton LaHashem. It's Shabbat for Hashem, not only for you. It's a covenant, both sides. Kol ha'oseh bo melacha yumat. Everyone who violates the 39 restrictions of Shabbat will be put to death. Lo tevaru esh bechol moshvotechem beyom haShabbat. The Torah now speaks, you should not create any form of fire on a 7th day, on Shabbat. Anywhere you are, bechol moshvotechem. Why the Torah say in every place you live? Why? It's extra. You don't need to. Just say, do not create fire and finish. Because all the wise guy will say, oh, that was only applying to the desert, but not, or also to Israel, but not to America, not to Italy. We live in Italy. It doesn't apply to us. We cannot put fire where Hashem said, that when they're sitting over there, but over here we allowed. That's why the Torah says, everywhere you're going to live, this covenant applies to you. Also in another place the Torah says that it applies to all the generation. Not only to the generation that accepted the Torah. Where does it say it? Lecha ulevanecha ad olam. To you and your children after you forever, for eternity. So there's no exit from this obligation. This is it. But my question to you now is, why the Torah only spoke about lo tevaru esh? There are 39 different restrictions. We already learned from the Melechet Mishkan, Hashem told Moshe this, 39 this, and in the end he say, none of it can be done on Shabbat. So we already have 39 restrictions. After Hashem told him, this is how you prepare the Mishkan, the temporary temple that you move with you when you move in the desert. This cannot be done on Shabbat. This is what Moshe told them. Ayom Shabbat, you cannot do it. So fine, so from here we learn. Why all of a sudden, it's a lo tevaru esh b'chol moshvotechem? Now we're going to learn the rule. Judaism have 13 formulas how to learn the oral Torah. Shlosha asar ikarim, 13 foundations. It's yud gimel midot shatorah nidreshet b'hem. What's special about this? There are 13 ways to learn from the written Torah things that applies to the law. For instance, one of the 13 things is, if the Torah has a list of things to talk about, instead of repeating it 39 times, you should not do this and this and this, because if you're going to do it, you're going to be dead. You should not do this and this and this, because if you're going to do it, you'll die. You should not, 39 verses, when you can do it in one. So then the rule is called, kol hayotze min haklal, everything that came out of the rule, did not come to teach about himself. It came to teach about the rule, which means now the Torah takes from the, in this case we have 39, a rule that combines 39 different laws. Instead of repeating the same thing that applies to each 39, the Torah takes one of the 39, in our case it's 39, could be more, could be less, and speaks a little bit further about it. Everything that we just spoke about, this applies to all the other 38, which means here it's violation of one of the 39 laws. If you do it, God forbid, you should be put to death and your soul get cut out of the life of eternity for not keeping Shabbat. And the same way it's for lighting any kinds of energy, fire, electric, all kinds of things. From there, it applies to all the rest of the other ones. This is it. Now remember, Melechet Machshevet Asra Torah. I don't have time to teach the laws of Shabbat. I did it in one of my lectures. But you should know that every violation of Shabbat could be either a violation directly from the Torah, which if a person did it intentionally, he's subject to a death penalty. If he got warning from two kosher witnesses, two people who can rely on the word, they keep the laws, so they are reliable people. They gave him a warning, you're not allowed to do this on Shabbat, and then he got caught again, repeating the same sin. From that moment on, if he did it intentionally, obviously he did, because they already warned him, you're not allowed to do it, he cannot come and say, I didn't know. Or what do you mean you didn't know? You were warned a week ago. Or you were warned in the morning. Or you were warned 2 months ago. Doesn't matter. There's a record already in your file that you got a warning already. Or repeating it, subject you, God forbid, to a death penalty. However, sometimes a person can come and say, I'm very sorry, it's the first time I got caught, I have no record. What do they do? Automatically, even if they know he did it intentionally, they cannot put him to death. Why? Because there's always a slice of a doubt. You know, that maybe he didn't understand, maybe he wasn't aware of it. Whatever the case is, they must give him a warning first. But if he did something not intentional, accidentally, either he didn't know today's Shabbat, or he didn't know it's not allowed on Shabbat, or anything like that, or accidentally, by an instinct, he has to bring a sacrifice to Beit HaMikdash, a goat, it's called Korban Chatat, for not intentional Chilul Shabbat. Not intentional Chilul Shabbat. And I remember, in the old days, it was a big thing. You have to ride your horse or your donkey all the way to Jerusalem, 2 weeks to each direction. You have to pay hundreds of dollars for the goat. You have to leave your business for a month. For one violation of Shabbat, accidentally you wrote a name on a piece of paper or something. That's it. No, so okay, we'll get to it in a minute. And there are a third category that you actually violated Shabbat and you're completely innocent. For instance, is it possible in our day that a person will turn the light on Shabbat and will be not guilty, that he doesn't have to bring a sacrifice? Remember, today we don't have sacrifices, so we lose with different kinds of things that is equal to the aggravation of bringing a sacrifice. Either we lose the money. Oh, the Gemara said that one of the Chachamim said, when Beit HaMikdash will be built, I will be the first one who come and bring a goat. Why? One time was learning Torah on Shabbat. And remember, in the old days, they didn't have electric like today. So they put olive oil. And, you know, sometimes the candle was running out. Almost another minute, it's going to be off. So what they do? They tilt it, that the oil will come close to the fire. Because now, that's the end of the oil. So they put something underneath that the oil comes. Bringing the oil close to the fire and making the fire higher, it's like lighting new fire. You understand? So sometimes when a person is so deep in the learning, he doesn't pay attention that it's Shabbat now, and he turns it. So there's halacha that you're not allowed to learn next to the candle on Shabbat. You're not allowed to learn next to it. Why? That you maybe reach your arm and add some more oil to the candle. It's similar to what we have today, dimmer lights. Sometimes you cannot read, so accidentally you're going to make the light higher. So he said, no, I won't forget. Somebody like me will not violate Shabbat. And in the end, he forgot. Why? He was so deep inside the learning that in the end, he forgot. So what happened? He said, when Beit HaMikdash will be built, I'm going to bring a sacrifice for this sin that I made. Not intentional, but I was supposed to be more careful. Today, don't learn from these two dimmer lights. Why? We are not Chazal. We are not the sages that can come and learn learnings like Chazal did. We're not in their level. We're not in their league. Even though it's very similar, there is no restriction learning Torah next to a light that you can increase the light with a dimmer. However, it would be very clever to put a sticker on it or tape or a note. Hey, it's Shabbat, you know, don't forget, because in case accidentally you come to increase the light, it will remind you not to do it. How can you light? How can you turn the light on and not be guilty at all? That you don't even have to bring a sacrifice
for a home,
huh?
For a sick person?
No. I'm talking in a healthy person. He turned the light on. Remember, if he forgot his Shabbat, he's still guilty, even though it's not intentional. He's still guilty. Oh, you forgot that you're not, today Shabbat, or that he didn't know that you're not allowed to turn the fire on, I mean the electric on. In that case, he has to bring a goat. But what happened? How can he turn the light on and not even be guilty of having to bring a goat? For instance, he was yawning and stretched and accidentally hit the light. And the light went on Shabbat. In a case like this, it doesn't even have to bring a goat. It's not even needs a korban chatat. The question is why? Why if a person forgot accidentally, he came out of his room by instinct, he shut the light or put the light on. Oh, Shabbat, my friend, you have to bring a goat. How much is this? $300-$400. You just found guilty, penalty. People worry about the ticket in the morning, right away, 6 o'clock in the winter, he's already running down the stairs. Every little thing on Shabbat, hundreds of dollars, my friends. Yes, you have to be careful. If it was important to you, you wouldn't forget. When people begin to be Shomer Shabbat, they forget a lot. After 5, 6, 7 years, it's very, very rare. Once, I don't know, in 10 years that he forgets. Why? Because it's already very important to him. He understands the level of Shabbat. So what are we seeing here? A person turned the light on Shabbat and is not guilty at all. He doesn't even have to bring a goat. How can it be? Who can tell me what's the difference? What's the difference here to compare to the other case that you have to do it?
That was totally not his fault. He couldn't have helped it. Whereas the other way, you could have helped it.
He couldn't have helped it, but he made an innocent mistake.
But he didn't realize that the light was there. Like, you could walk by a sensor light and not even realize that it was there.
Very good. So the point is, remember what I said before? It's not melechet machshevet. In order for you to be guilty of a sin of Shabbat, the transaction must start in your brain. If it didn't start in your brain, you cannot be guilty. Why? Melechet machshevet. Machshevet means thinking. It didn't start with thinking. Step number one is thinking. Didn't start with thinking, you cannot be guilty from the Torah. Why? He didn't even see the light. Let's just say, he walked in the street and a sensor went on. However, when a person forgot for a second today's Shabbat, instinct, he put the light on. He went through his head, I want light. He just forgot that today's Shabbat. Or he forgot that light is not allowed, but the transaction started in his head. I wanted light. I wanted to write. I was planning to do an act. Which, however, over here, I didn't even plan. Walking in the street and there's a little wire that you didn't see and you pull it and, I don't know, an electric gate started to work. I didn't think I want this gate open. It never came to my head before I did the transaction. That's the three different categories of the sin of Shabbat. Either way, it's a big mitzvah to tell every Jew that you can think of that if the first thing they have to do right away, accept Shabbat. Why? From here, everything else comes after. Why? A person goes to shul, he meets people, he starts to have guests, the words of Torah on the table. One thing leads to another. However, they can put tefillin every day, they'll stay like this for the rest of their life. They will never get to a higher level just by putting tefillin. He puts tefillin 5 minutes a day, say Shema, and go to work and make all these other sins. When a person becomes a Shomer Shabbat, you already know he can categorize himself as a religious person. Even though he's still far away from being fully religious, but just making a change of keeping the main covenant of Judaism, which is the Sabbath, already can say that you enter the right category. The right category. So this is it. So everyone is a big thing to invest in it in everything you can. Invite people, give them gifts, make deals with them, your brother, your cousins, anyone you can to convince them to keep Shabbat. Once they start with Shabbat, everything, Shabbat they have time, they begin to read, they begin to learn. One thing leads to another. They come to the shul, they came to pray, they hear 15, 20 minutes words of Torah from the rabbi. One thing leads to another. But if they don't do that, then, you know, what else you expect? All right, let's move on. The Chafetz Chaim, he was traveling one time, and he came to a motel. You know, in the old days, the motel had a restaurant, kosher, non-kosher, which people traveling. And he saw a Jew, and the Jew was not Shomer Shabbat. And the Jew saw this holy rabbi, and he felt like maybe having a conversation with him. He started to talk to him, and Chafetz Chaim started to explain to him Shabbat. So the words of the Chafetz Chaim, imagine if the Chafetz Chaim would be in this generation, for sure they'll put a ban on him. Not that he's not holy, he's the holiest, he's more holy than probably all the rabbis combined. Nobody will argue about the level of his holiness that is the greatest. For that, they cannot argue. But they would say, Rabbi is too strict, cannot hear him. Because every other word who came from his mouth was heaven and hell. People don't like to hear it. First thing the Chafetz Chaim told that Jew that is not Shomer Shabbat, I cry on that beautiful hand of you. So the guy said, why, Rabbi, what's wrong with my hand? Such a beautiful arm will be burned in hell. That's the first opening statement of their conversation. And then the guy, of course, tried to defend himself. Why hell, Rabbi, why? I'm doing a lot of good things also. started to explain to him what Shabbat means. When the person realized what Shabbat is, he started to cry. Remember, it's the Chafetz Chaim. I can say millions of words. He can say two sentences. His two words, two sentences will be much more effective. Why? It's 100% pure mouth. When he was 80 years old, one of his students say something and he went to him and he opened up his mouth and he said, look at my mouth. Do you see any problem with my teeth? One cavity, do you see? The guy looks at him and says, he had a baby teeth. Everything white, crystal clean, nothing, no cavities. He says, you know why? My mouth is complete, no problems, never had problems. I never said one word of Lashon Hara in my whole life. I never made sins with my mouth. I watch it very carefully. I watch my mouth. Hashem watch it also for me. I make sins with my mouth. My mouth get hurt. Right or wrong? That's how it is. I want to tell you something. Speaking about mouth, I heard an amazing story today, and I verified that it's true, the story. You know, today, I always said in my lectures that when people come to collect charity, unfortunately, many of them are not reliable. Not to say complete thieves, but completely not reliable, many of them. And the rule today is very, very simple. If you do not know the person, maybe he's 100% kosher. Maybe he's even holy. I'm not saying no. We don't know who he is. If you don't know the person, give a dollar, give a quarter, give something just not to be embarrassed and goodbye. You don't know, don't believe any stories. Don't believe letters. Don't believe signatures. Don't believe pictures. Don't even believe phone calls with references. It's one whole big setup. One other problem is that today there's another big problem. People who come and knock on your door, you may give them, let's say, $100 donation. How much money goes to them, do you know? Sometimes 50%, sometimes 30%, sometimes 70%. Depend on the deal they made with the driver. How does it work? There are drivers, which some of them are not even religious. Chalalei Shabbat, complete crooks. They, over the years, they were taxi drivers. They drive all kinds of rabbis to rich mansion. And they saw in what places the person gave donation and what person they don't. And they mark it in their notebook. After a while, they already know which house is productive, which house is not. Now, when rabbis that wants to come from Israel and they have no idea, they don't speak English, they don't know anything, they talk to each other in Israel. So, call up that guy. He knows all the rich people. He can save you a week until you find out. He knows them already. They already know him. He comes. He'll take you and you split whatever you get. He gets 50%, 30%, 70%. Depend how greedy they are. First thing you have to do to check if he came with the driver or not. If there is a driver wait outside, you have to tell them, I cannot give you anything today. I want you to leave me your envelope with your address and I will mail you a check to that place. That's one thing. Why? When you mail him the check tomorrow, he will keep 100%. That's if you really know for sure that he has this place, this yeshiva, and he really collects for a good deed. As I said, most of them are not reliable. And since we are not Eliyahu Navi, we cannot tell, we are not Mashiach. You bring a person, kosher, not kosher. I don't know, it's hard to know. Only Hashem knows. Because we do not know, you're willing to gamble with your money, 50-50? You give $1,000 to a person just because he has beautiful beard and you don't know, maybe he went to the casino, maybe he went to his pocket, to his stomach for another steak. That was your intention? Or you really wanted to do something good with your money? So I'm telling you why I remember now to speak about this. I heard an amazing story a few hours ago, between Mincha and Arvit. Two people, as they were drivers, they started with 30%, then 50%, then 70%. Take it or leave it, they tell them. The rabbi is thinking, I better get $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, even though he keeps double than me, at least I get something with my own. Where will I knock? They give me a dollar. Then they say, what are we fools? We're driving these rabbis and we're giving them 30%. We'll keep everything for ourselves. Papers everyone can get. It's no big deal. You print. It's all fake. And we go and we make a story that we collect for it. So they started to collect these two crooks by claiming that one of them has a daughter that she's deaf. And he needs to collect $100,000 for an operation to make her hear. It's affecting her life. Nobody will marry her. It's breaking the house. The wife is depressed. And make such a story. Even the walls crying when they hear that story. In the meantime, that guy is not even married. This week, he had his first baby. A girl. Deaf. Deaf. Yeah, what's the chance a person will have a baby that is deaf? 1 out of 10 million, 1 out of 100 million. I don't know how many deaf people out there. I don't see that many of them. In my whole life, I can count on one hand how many deaf people I met. That means they're not that many. He had a girl, deaf. And this is what the Gemara warned. Everything you lie about, in the end, will become true. How are you? Broke. Business is bad and business is booming. You will get to days that the word broke will become true. How is this, this, and this? Everything is a lie by him. Business is bad, Rabbi. Wait 2 years, business become really bad. Every lie. They call, why don't you come to the lecture? Oh, I was sick. Why did I have this problem? I'm sick. For sure you will get sick. If you come to collect tzedakah and you don't need it, you can survive without it, and you come and collect anyway, for sure, in your lifetime, you will become a beggar, that you will depend on the people to give you food. For sure, one way or the other, it's guaranteed. All these lies cost big time in the end, and then you have to pay it all back. What do you think? Hashem will take it back. All the lies, cheating the customer, cheating this, cheating there. Everything must be returned to the last penny before the punishments begin. The punishment is separate. It's education. First, you have to return. Just like they do here, the FBI and the police. They caught you. Let's say you made money from an illegal transaction in a stock market. You knew in advance. Somebody told you information. You made, $200,000. Before they even talk to you about the deal, how many years you've been in prison, first thing, not only they take 200, they take 2 million if you have. Everything you have, maybe they leave your wife a little bit to survive 2-3 months. And then she'll be on the street with the kids. They take everything first. Why are you taking 2 million? I only made 200. Take 200? No. First we freeze everything. Then the lawyer cost you another $300,000 in case you didn't know. Minimum $70,000 up front to go to a trial. Unless if you plead guilty and then you go to prison 5-6 years and they take away everything, fine. But it's very easy cases to prove. They see your records. Oh, for 5 years you're a trader. Oh, all of a sudden he makes a $200,000 transaction. All his transactions, $2,000, $3,000. All of a sudden, an hour before the information came out to the news, boom, the guy bought so much, and he went up, 10%. And he made, $20,000, $30,000 profit. They have red flags. Right away, jumped. A lot of ignorant, foolish people that they never use the red. Right away, somebody tell him, buy a lot. Tomorrow, I know it's my uncle's company. He runs, he buy. It's not a criminal after all. He can spend the next 6 years in prison after they take away everything he saved in 30 years. And it's very common. Very common. I tell you, I'm coming now from a meeting with a kid. A good kid. Believe me, a good kid, not a criminal. A good kid, became religious, come to learn, works for his living. No. One time he asked a ride with a guy. Give me a ride. He sits in a car on the way from one place to another. The guy told him, wait for me 10 minutes in the car. I have to drop something. He stops somewhere in New Jersey on the way. He goes. He comes after a few minutes. They start to drive, 1/4 of a mile. police, FBI, everyone around them. Get out of the car, handcuffs, this, checking the car, finding drugs. The one who gives him a ride, is a drug dealer. He knows him, he never believed that this guy is a drug dealer. Now the guy who was just taking a ride, in his life he never saw drugs. Now he's facing who knows how many years in prison, just by being in a car. Why? Even though the other guy admitted that he's the only one who dealt, and he has nothing to do with it, they have no idea what is he doing. And not only that, they even know that that's the case, because they've been following this guy for a long time already. And they know the passenger was never involved. First time they saw his face that day when they made the arrest. They're still forcing him to admit something. They don't leave him alone. Unless, if not, we'll go to trial. What kind of stupid people? You're going to spend who knows how many, $100,000 in a court system of putting him in jail, putting him here for an innocent person that you know is innocent? That's why they spend the money of the American people? Knowing he's innocent. The lawyer even told me today in the meeting. They know that he has nothing to do with us. But their ego is on the line. Why did we arrest him in first place? So since we made that mistake, we must force him to admit. He has to admit. It will go on his record. It will never become... This is what's going on here. Cannot rely on them.
He should go to trial because a jury...
Ah! So I told it to the lawyer. So what does he have to lose? He'll go to a trial. The lawyer say yes. Does he have $250,000 for a trial?
No, the state has to pay for it.
Oh, so I asked that. So that the state will give him a lawyer. He said, well, with this kind of lawyer, you're not sure sometimes if he's a lawyer or a prosecutor. You understand what's going on here? Cannot rely on them. That's what's going on here. And the lawyer himself told me, don't look for justice over there. You can get away with nothing, or out of nowhere you get 5-10 years in prison. Out of nowhere, the jury doesn't like his face, doesn't like his yarmulke, who cares? Send him to jail.
Talk to the press. Get the press on the story.
Don't be a big shot. Do me a favor. When you be instead of this guy, believe me, you think a million times if you want to go to a trial or not. So what's the system is? You are forced to admit. Now I'm telling the lawyer, but there's only one problem. Up to now, in every investigation they investigated him, he claims strongly that he has nothing to do with this. He didn't know anything about it. Now you're saying that he must say that he knew in order for you to make a deal with him, that he's going to go on probation, that he won't go to jail? What kind of justice system it is? For one, for 6-8 months, he's claiming every week, I had nothing to do with this, I don't know anything about it, I nothing. Now all of a sudden he has to come say, well, I knew that he's doing a drug deal. He told me, don't worry about it. That's every day like this. Much like this, I'm thinking to myself, what a corrupted world. What a corrupted world. You see, nobody is looking for the truth. It's just business. Much like in business. In business, there's no truth. You can tell a guy, today I want for this diamond $1,000. Tomorrow you're in a bad mood. You say, today I want to charge you $1,500. Take it or leave it. So, okay, I have no choice. I buy it. I told you to buy it. Go somewhere else. What do you want from me? Now you come to complain? I told you I used to charge $1,000. Today I want $1,500. You don't like it? Goodbye. Remember the story I told you about the girl that is religious and her father is not. He forced her to come to the business to work on Shabbat. You heard that story or no? Huh? It's worth to tell again. So the father said today, I'm going on a show on a weekend. You must come and replace me in a store. She said, Abba, I'm Shomer Shabbat. I'm going to the shul. He said, one time you don't go to the shul. You stand in a store. They have chandelier business. They sell fancy chandeliers. She said, but Abba, I cannot be Mechalel Shabbat, touch money on Shabbat. Nah, it's no big deal. You're only touching money. You're not really doing anything. I'll arrange somebody to drop you there. Go, don't worry. Try to negotiate. So now she's standing on a store and she's thinking, what should I do not to be Mechalel Shabbat? What happens if a person wants to buy a chandelier? I have to fill up the receipt, these violations, one after the other. could be 50 different violations in one sale. Every person who comes to buy something, she say triple price. 2,000, she say 6,000. 10,000, 30,000. Then, close to the end of the day, around 5 o'clock, a guy walks in. He see a chandelier, something commercial, huge, like for shoes, for conventions, for hotels. Have $50,000, the chandelier. She said, $150,000. The guy said, what? You crazy? $150,000? How can it be? What is the world? Hardly 50. Sir, take it or leave it. Trying to be nasty that you leave quick. The guy leave. Now remember, she works in a store all week. But on Shabbat, she's always off. But now he's forcing her to take over. Monday, the guy showed up. You guys are lucky. I went all over for this chandelier. This is exactly what I need. I couldn't find it anywhere. Texas. Money, $150,000. The father, she said to the father, shh, let me handle it. $150,000, she sold the chandelier. She said to the father, no. You see, you just made an extra $100,000. But Hashem is showing you not to be Mechalel Shabbat. If Hashem wants, he will come on Monday. Doesn't have to come on Shabbat. You know, I tell you something. The father in the end became Shomer Shabbat. That's the happy end of the story. But I'll tell you an interesting thing. You know, there are many Jews who they rent a place in a mall. They do not want to be Mechalel Shabbat. They are Shomer Shabbat. They want to go to Shul. But the mall in the contract forced them to open on Shabbat or they sue them. They get them out of business. Because the policy of the mall that all stores must be open on a weekend. They want to make the mall prestige. So some Jews tell me, what am I going to do? I'm not going to open on Shabbat. I have to put a goy there to open. Otherwise, they're going to sue me. I'm going to have to pay fortune. You know, they sue lawyers, this. So I came up with an idea. I told them, put a goy in a store. And everyone who comes, there's two ways to do it. One, every customer who comes on Shabbat to buy cell phone, to buy clothes, whatever he wants to buy, you tell him, sir, we have a technical problem, but here is a coupon, 15% off. Come back Sunday or Monday. We'll give you 15% off for your aggravation. Prepare coupons, 15% off. He comes. People like in America coupons. They spend $30 on a gas to save $5 on a coupon, right? Not always they think. But over here, I don't know, it's $500 sale, $300 sale, 15% off. It's worth it for him to come back. Whatever the discount is, it doesn't matter. You give him a discount. And you say, sir, today the machine doesn't work. We have a technical problem. So here, he doesn't know now who owns the store. The guy, he looks like the owner. Come back Monday, they all come back Monday. But then I tell the people that if you really trust Hashem, you don't need this. But why do you need it? To prevent them from suing you and all these problems. But if you really trust Hashem, you know, I told you the story of the Gabbai who didn't know how to write, no? I told you the story?
No.
This story is $1 million. This Gabbai for many years is the Gabbai of the Shul, is a complete ignorant person. He doesn't know how to read, he doesn't know how to write. How does he run a Shul? People pay cash. Not like today, everything credit card, everything PayPal, everything checks. Today, hardly see cash. But in the old days, people come with gold coins. They pay. So, 20 years he runs the shul. One time the rabbi became old. They replaced the rabbi. The new rabbi said, where are the books of the shul? I said, what books? It's all in my head. So he said to him, what do you mean all in your head? How do you know who owes what? He said, everyone's who buy aliyah. I announce Motzei Shabbat, you know, we put clips, whatever, and then I tell them they pay, I go and I collect, that's it. We never had problems, everyone pays here, it's good community. So the new rabbi say, I'm very sorry, I need a gabbai who knows how to handle the books. So we'll pay you compensation, and we have to fire you. We have to get a new gabbai. How many years you here? 20 years, 15% a year from your salary? He got a nice amount of money. He got fired from the shul. Now he doesn't know what to do with the money. He doesn't know what to do. He comes to his rabbi. The rabbi say, you know what? On the way from this town to the other town, all the way, there is not one restaurant and one motel. People sometimes have to sleep overnight outside. It's dangerous, animals, snow. Why don't you open a motel on the main road? Make a kosher place, not kosher place. Jews, goyim, they're stuck on the way. They have to sleep by you. Remember, there's no electric in those days, no nothing. 5, 6 o'clock, that's it. You have to find a place to rest. Especially the robbers in the old days, they used to attack at night. Today, it's no different. Day, night, there's always light. But at night, when there's nothing outside, imagine you walk in the street, somebody can put a bag on your head, hit you on the head, finish. He takes away everything you have. So he opened up that motel. 2, 3 years later, he became a very rich man. There's piles of cash. Then one banker stopped by him and say, sir, what are you doing with all the money you're making here? How come you're not a customer in our bank? There's no other bank here. I don't remember receiving any deposits from you. He said, I don't believe in banks. He said, what are you talking about? Whenever you're hiding your money, I can double your money every 2, 3 years for you. There's good investment, real estate, this, that, commodities. Give me the money. I promise you, you'll make a lot of money. Here, call this guy, go ask this guy. They all put money by us. We're making a lot of money for them. The guy said, oh, very good. Right now my money is under the ground somewhere. Now I'm going to triple it. No, very good. So he comes to the bank. After speaking, he gets the contract, all the papers out. And he says, sign here, sign here. The guy said, what are you talking about? What do you mean, sign here, sign here? I don't know how to write. He said, come on, enough with these jokes. What do you mean you don't know how to write? He said, I'm telling you, I don't know how to write. I never wrote in my whole life. I never went to school. I don't know how to read, nothing. So the guy said to him, you're running such a business, a motel, and you don't know how to read. Who are you telling stories? He told him, you don't understand. The only reason I'm sitting here talking to you is because I'm a fool. Because I don't know how to read and write. If I knew how to read and write, I would still be a gabbai in a shul for $1,000 a month. You understand why I became rich? When I came to America, I used to sell credit card machines. When the days used to be a booming business, not like today, you have millions on every store who opens up, 50 salespeople waiting outside when they hang the sign. In those days, it was all manual. People used to pay 5%. All of a sudden, they came up with this computer, 1.5%. From 5% or 4.5%, dropped to 1.5%, saving 3% on every transaction, and you receive the money in 2 days, automatically, nobody heard such a thing. All you had to do is to go from one store to another and make business. They sent me to Flatbush Avenue to a jeans and sneaker stores that owned by a Syrian Jew. I come to the place. I see he sits on a stage by the register over there. I see a long, 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 tons of sneakers, leather jacket, jeans. Mainly, you know, Flatbush Avenue. It's not exactly a Jewish neighborhood, if you know what I mean there. So as we talk, he said, it's not one store. I own 13 like this. I said, wow. The Israeli dream. 6 months, I'm in America. 13 stores in one shot. A few $100 commission on each store. Psh, beautiful. Guess what? The deal never went through. Why? You think it's a joke, huh? He couldn't sign the application. I see he takes his finger, he takes a box of ink from the drawer, he goes like this, after I filled up all the paper, for half an hour, sign here, sign here, he takes his finger and he goes like this on the application. I say to him, what's this? That's how I sign, in all my documents. I said, what do you mean? That's how you sign. He has to go through all the copies. Like this, it doesn't go through. This is the top, is your copy. The rest goes to the bank. He got angry at me. He thought I'm making fun that he doesn't know how to sign. I run 13 years, 20 years I'm in this country, I manage without signatures. Who do you think you are? Get out of here! I was going to my car crying. Doesn't know how to write his name in English. And he had 13 big sneaker stores. Huh? You would hope to have such an empire, no? Why? When Hashem wants even this Paul, you see here, become a genius. If Hashem wants, nothing can stop it. You know how many foolish people I know, they have so much money? And I know how many smart people come to talk to me, bright, don't have money to pay the rent. And how many foolish people, hard to believe how these people can even function, forget about running a business. And you ask yourself, what's going on here? You know the expression, the right hand does not know what the left hand does? There's a woman who she takes care of two princes, prince and a princess, two kids that are in one of the richest Jewish family in the world. They live in some mansion in Fifth Avenue, and they have a few houses, the family. And this family, I begin to think that the only reason that they came to the world is for the community of the yeshiva in Muncie. They buy everything with the price tag, goes to all the poor people in Muncie. Now you have poor people in Muncie that the Avrech learns in yeshiva and he makes $500 for the whole month of learning in yeshiva. $500. And his wife wears jackets, $1,500 each. Why? They buy every day. They send the driver, buy this. Now they don't buy one, they buy 20. They like pants, they buy 20. They like shoes, they buy 7. They don't know what to do with their money. You ask them to help money, to give tzedakah, for sure you won't get a penny. But just from the leftover, I can open a business. So the woman that takes care of the kids, today she told me, I told her, I don't understand. The man told you they're selling one of their houses to clean all the house. I have a guy, I have two people, they need furniture, they're getting married. Let them bring a truck with few workers and clean the whole house. That's what he told you. She said, yes, that's what he told me. But it has to be repeated 4 or 5 times. Why? He can tell me something and the next day ask me, where is it? I already have experience with you. And now, not only I have to get his approval, I need his wife to agree. And even his wife, I have to ask 3 or 4 times, because by tomorrow, with all the pills that she takes, you don't know what's going to happen. You understand what's going on? And this is the people who make billions of dollars a year. What do we need to talk about them? They're good people. What all these murderer boxers? 10 minutes, $30 million. That's a proof that reward and punishment, it's not even in this world. What do you? Don't you see? Take a monster. What does he know? To kill someone, to hit him. Everyone scream, kill him. $30 million. No? Then he bites his ear off. Then he makes tattoo on his eye. You know the story with him. One time he drove in Midtown Tunnel, almost 200 kilometers an hour, which is 120 miles in Midtown Tunnel. And the police was waiting for him outside, or chased him, I don't know. And he told the cop, the Lamborghini or Ferrari, one of them that he had, was $250,000 car. He told him, just take the car and let me go. I don't know how they found out later. Take the car and let me go. He doesn't want to lose his license. He has 60 cars. Take it. Then when he needed to sell his home, he had a house, 60 bedrooms. He sold it for $4 million. A house here, a Bukharian house here in Queens in Jewel Avenue worth $4 billion. Small, tiny house in Queens. No? Queens, Great Neck. A big hotel, his house. 60 bedrooms. Imagine how he needed money today. $4 million. He sold it. Why? These people have no brain. But Hashem gives them billions. Why? To show you, don't think that your reward is in this world. If you think that I'm going to pay you based on your mitzvot here, then all religious people should be not billionaires, trillionaires. You know what Madoff said yesterday in jail? Everyone knows that Madoff is a big rasha, no? Crook, rasha, he make thousands of people miserable, and there's no doubt about this. He even admitted it, so. But one thing he said that is 100% right. So everyone hates me for these Ponzi scams that I made. Why nobody hates the United States government? They do exactly what I did in much bigger amounts. The whole United States government is one big Ponzi scams, borrowing from here, borrowing from there, and then they defaulting here, defaulting there. And when there's politics behind the scene, they force certain people to take their deals. If not, they assassinate them. What do you think? So over here, it's one individual, everyone wants to kill him, and they're right. But with the government, everyone is afraid to make a beep. But it's exactly the same thing, borrowing and borrowing and borrowing. And in the end, of course, everybody knows they won't pay it. Same thing with the Russians. The Arabs keep borrowing, 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 and in the end, they never paid. And the Russians continue to sell to them because they have to create jobs in Russia. What are they going to say? They close all the weapon factories? You know, 2 million Russians will be unemployed. They're going to start killing on the street. They must give them jobs. So they don't have a choice. You steal from them 7 times, they continue to sell to you. Same thing here in America, the bankruptcy law. I just heard about the supermarket chain that they owe $50 million to the suppliers. And they already, they're Chapter 11, they told them we cannot pay a dollar. And all their suppliers, with no exception, agree to continue to sell them under their new name, knowing that those are the ones who owe us million. But this time, they signed that they're going to pay them COD, no more credit. How long it's going to be? 2-3 months, and then the credit will begin again. That's why I always laugh when I hear this on the news. Call now! The laws of bankruptcy are about to be changed. Don't miss the train. Soon it's going to be very hard, you know, to steal. Now it's still easy. You come, you fill up a few papers, finished. But just remember, this is in a court here. In a court over there, your file is growing by a minute. Interest, penalty. You're interested in goyim, you're going to have to pay it, my friend. You cannot steal one penny from the goyim, in case you didn't know. And I know it's hard to hear, like you asked me before the lecture. Everyone speaks Lashon Hara, so for that we have no share to the world to come. Who am I? I'm only reading what the Torah says. What, I'm a part of the Torah that I am entitled to my own opinion? What am I going to say? Oh, no, you're right. Since everyone is doing it, it cannot be that that's the law. Everyone is speeding on the highway. But the law is that they pull over people and they give them a lot of tickets. But everyone is speeding. Even the cops are speeding. The judges in the court, they're also speeding. What do you think? What, they drive 50 on the Palisades? Show me one judge that drives 50. Or 55 on the Garden State Parkway. Driving 55, it's like standing in your place. That's the reason for the accidents. If they make you drive 55 in a 7 lanes highway, of course you fall asleep. Wow. Once in a while you see a 90 years old man like this. He drives 55. But everybody drives 75, routine, thousands of cars. But they catch one. Same thing in Wall Street. One guy that got into the problem, he told me thousands are doing it every hour. But it's like walking on a beach, seeing a million people, everyone is a criminal, and you say, you, come. You walk with a bikini, we're giving you a ticket. What about everybody else? You are the one today that paid the price. This is how it goes. But this is in human justice. Some got away. But with Hashem, everything is recorded. In the end, everybody must pay. Nobody can run away from a penny. That's why a smart person, I go with emunah, and my hands are clean. I don't take money that I don't need to take. If I can manage without the help of the government, I will do it. Yes, it will be tight, but maybe I'm not entitled. I'm not going to lie on the application, not going to cheat, not going to show phony income, all these tricks that people do. Because that's not what Judaism calls for. The Torah hates all these lies. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that the system here was never considering the Jewish needs. The system here is based on goyim that have two kids, three kids, and they go to public school. They don't have to pay tuition. And the system is designed for family that, you know, they are poor, but according to their standards. In the Jewish life, life is minimum double than the goyim, minimum double. Because, right, just the tuition alone, you need an extra salary. And to double your salary right there, just to pay 6 or 7 or 10 tuitions, alone you need $4,000 or $5,000 a month before you even started to eat. And because your family is much bigger, then you need a bigger house. So your rent is bigger, your mortgage is bigger, your taxes are higher, and everything else is much more expensive. The food is double. Everything is much more. So automatically, a Jew needs much, much more help from the government, but they don't care. They have their standards. And people that, according to their standard, are not entitled to anything, according to them, the kid should starve to death at home. The whole system was designed that kids will not starve to death. They don't want people to starve to death because then they go and shoot on the streets. They have to protect the land. If everybody will be hungry and they walk in the street, shootings, robbing, stealing, riots, nothing to lose. Put me in jail. At least I have food over there, heat, a bed. Right now I'm homeless. What do I have to lose? So to prevent anarchy, they made all these laws. They're subsidizing things, welfare, all kinds of things. But these laws were not designed for the Jews. So the Jews have a problem. After all, they cannot cheat on the application. It's a problem. You know, for them, you know, I don't know the laws of Medicaid, but I think you cannot make more than $1,500 a month. If you make more than that, then you're not entitled to get.
It depends upon the kid size that you have.
Whatever. So just to give you an idea, a tuition of one kid in high school could be $1,500 a month. So if you already have enough to pay the tuition, that means you live with nothing. You don't need a home. You don't need to eat. It's very complicated, I know. What can we do? Who say to be religious is easy? If it was easy, we wouldn't deserve a reward. There's only one thing we have to work on to make our life easier and easier. What is it? Emunah. The more strong Emunah you have, the more Hashem helps. That's the bottom line. Tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, there is a surgery in the head of this boy, 19 years old, Zohar Mordechai Ben Roni. He was diagnosed with cancer in his neck. They made one surgery in Israel. They cleaned 70%. Right away, they saw the 30% is growing tremendously. 19 years old kid. And it started to go towards the shoulder. First one shoulder hair, then the next shoulder, and then it's going towards the head. It's growing to all directions. And it's right on the nerve. A tenth of an inch, the knife is moving left or right, you make him paralyzed for the rest of his life in the good scenario, if he doesn't die in the middle of the surgery. Many people, which I spoke to in the last 2 days, accepted on themselves to fast tomorrow, either full day or half a day, everyone according to his ability. Maybe we'll save this boy. The family came from Israel. $550,000 the surgery cost. The doctor showed them on a screen today with CDs. They sent from Israel all the CDs of all the MRIs. How is going to operate? He has to open up the throat, remove everything from here, remove it. I don't know how they do it. They put something instead of the breathing pipe. They remove it. Then the other, the pipe that you eat through, they remove it. They're completely opening the whole thing, and they try to clean it. It could be a 2 days operation. I don't know how long it's going to take. And doctors always give you these things that you don't know what to do. 90% chance, chas v'shalom, that he died. 90% chance. But Hashem can do everything. It's all in Hashem's. First, the Israeli army didn't approve the surgery. He's a soldier, so they are obligated to pay for all his medication. He got sick in the middle of being a soldier. Why? Because they only had like 3% chance to do anything. Not even to 3% chance. Then they check this, that. Now he called me up and he says, we need a miracle in the next hour and a half. They have a meeting now in Israel. All the officers are over there. If to approve the surgery or he dies in 2-3 weeks. Well, I say to myself, what do I have to lose? Let me call my cousin. I told you once, I have a cousin, he's a very, very holy person. Just like the days of the Gemara, with no exaggeration. All his life, from the minute I remember him, just Torah, holiness, watching the eyes, having 101% emunah in Hashem, and an amazing genius. Like, you don't find people like that. I never found anybody in this level. Never found. All he cares is about Torah and Hashem and nothing else in his life. They live in a tiny one-bedroom apartment, 10 kids in one living room, all of them sleeping in a, look at this bathroom over there. That's the size of their living room. Put 10 kids there to sleep. Try to imagine where they fit. The whole tiny apartment packed with books. All the shelves are broken from the weight. I told you, once I took two wealthy people to support the yeshiva that we have in Yerushalayim. And it was 10:15, 10:20 at night. I told him, let's go surprise my cousin. And I say, what, in this time? I say, yeah, he probably just came from the yeshiva now. But don't worry, doesn't matter. I promise you he's going to be learning Gemara. So now at 10:20 at night? After he comes from all day work, from 6 in the morning until now, and now at home he also learned. I say, I cannot live a minute without it. So we come to, he lives in the first floor, right on the ground level. First there on the left in Mattersdorf. Mattersdorf is mostly Americans in Yerushalayim. I say, as soon as we come, the door is a little bit open. I knock on the door, we push the door, I see him standing by the door, because there's no room in the house. The house is full of kids. House is a little tiny room, you know. Standing with the stand right by the door, by the entrance, standing. There's no room to sit. So tiny everything there. He stands over there and learn. I called him up. I told him, listen, you know, we already gave up. What can we do? According to nature, Hashem Yirachem. Maybe you can do something. I'm not asking questions. Do something. An hour later, the guy called me up. He said, I don't know what happened. The people who were against the surgery, all of them changed their mind. In the end, they surrender. He's coming tomorrow. Next day they were on the plane, they come, now they're in Baltimore. This is a very big miracle already, that they agreed to pay for the surgery. Without it, he's complete dead. So the first miracle happened, but it doesn't mean a lot. If tomorrow the surgery, Chas v'Shalom, won't be successful, what's the whole thing for? You know, when you look at it back, you wasted almost $600,000, and in the end you didn't save life. That's a double pain. So everyone who can do something for this boy, I don't know, I never saw him. I never saw this boy face to face. I heard a lot about him, became Baal Tshuva, Shabbat, Tefillin. When people are sick, they become religious. What can we do? I always tell people, wake up before you find out. Every day there's pain. Pain here, pain there. With so many tragedies are happening, it's like a Russian roulette. Every second, Chas v'Shalom, you'll be the next one who get the call. At least, if we have to leave this world, we live clean, righteous, because, you know, we're never going to be here anyway forever. But at least, Chas v'Shalom, if it catch us, at least we can come there and say, yeah, Hashem, you took me young, but at least I was Shomer Shabbat, spooning tefillin, I was giving tzedakah, or learning Torah, not cheating in my business, good husband, good father. I did everything for you, whatever I could. So at least I know I did my share. You want to take me? Fine, you're the boss. There's nothing I can do. The problem that we have is most of these people who find themselves in this situation, they're far away from being righteous. To become righteous after you found out, Chas v'Shalom, that you have it, it's not even 1% of becoming righteous before. When a person has everything, a wife, children, nice house, good business, income, everything, and he puts everything secondary and Hashem comes first, that's a hero. When a person has a gun to his head, he's going to die in 2-3 weeks. If then he doesn't want to be religious, then it's, I don't know, I don't have a word for him. You decide what you want to call him. Then there's nothing I can say anymore. But most people, they become religious in hospital. I told you. For the few times I went to the hospital, people were coming to me. Come, pray for my father, for my brother, for me. Why? In the hospital, people remember, soon I'm going to see God. Over there, people realize. There's always an exception to the rule. There are people to the last minute, they refuse. Fine. But the idea is, remember, just when you think everything is perfect, chas v'shalom, the phone call can come. And you do not know it because you're not dealing with the public. Go to any rabbi you know in this town. Go to any rabbi you know in general. Go to every person who deals with the public and ask him how many cases like this every day he sees. If you don't believe me, come check my text messages from just from today. More than 13 life and death issues came to me today. An average every hour. From the morning to night, every hour a case. Go look at the names. A woman, this, that, a boy. One after the other. And this is only one person who gets messages. Imagine how many out there. Why? It's just strong judgment. Strong judgment. From everywhere you go. The Arabs are choking more and more and more. More missiles. More, more, more. Just when the fire goes on, who knows what's going to be next. Sicknesses are growing tremendously. Crime growing tremendously. Drug usage, there's no words to describe the increase in the last 10 years. It's growing by the minute. Every little 12, 13 years old either using drugs or dealing with drugs. Do you know that? Do you believe that there are many, many 12, 13 years old kids who live from selling drugs? You know that or no? 12 years old! It's not bar mitzvah already selling drugs in schools. Going to buy from one person, they're taking advantage on him. Then when he becomes 17, 18, take the bus to Pennsylvania. Somebody will meet you, give him this bag. You're going to make, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000. They don't have emunah in Hashem. They don't know you can be a hitman and get $300,000, but in the end you're a murderer. You're going to have to give all the money back and be executed as a murderer. They don't understand that the Torah is real. They do stupid things. In the end, nobody will enjoy this money. Nobody can enjoy money from drugs. In the end, either they'll take everything, and if they didn't take it in this life, it will only bring problems to his children. No blessing will come from this money. No blessing will come. And even synagogues, if they build synagogue with this kind of money, blood money, there will never be any blessing with this. Sometimes people understand that. They think, I don't want from here, I don't want from there. I told you the story with the Baba Sali. Person brought a big van full of cases of vegetables and fruits from the farm. He looked at everything. He said, go quickly, bury everything. Don't give anyone to eat from it. So why, Rabbi, why? Because it all, some of it was cut on Shabbat. I don't want to enjoy from it. There's no blessing in this kind of food. Bury it, everything, fresh, all just from the farm. Bury everything. You know, more than $1,000 vegetables and fruit. A whole truck full for him, for his yeshiva. Go bury everything. Why? If I trust Hashem, I don't want to enjoy from this. Nothing. You know, there are religious people in Israel. They don't take electric from the national electric company. There's one big company in Israel, not like here, competition. One. They don't take from them. On Shabbos, they have a generator. The generator makes noise next to their house when they try to learn in Kiddush all day, the generator. I don't want to take electric from Jews that are not keeping Shabbat. If I have to stay in the darkness on Shabbat, fine. You understand? Why? High level of emunah. They don't want to take a penny from the government, nothing whatsoever. They'll be poor, no problem. I'm not going to enjoy from anyone who goes against God. This is a high level. I'm not telling you that you should be in this level right now. There's a lot more to grow. But at least I'm mentioning it for us to know how far we are from being an ultimate righteous person. And when a person is righteous, you know, remember the Chafetz Chaim? Not one cavity, age 80. Nothing. And the Chafetz Chaim told the Jew, and from this we finished, the Chafetz Chaim told that Jew, Shabbat, this hand will be burned in hell. How can I not cry? And the Jew told him, Rabbi, you convinced me. But now I'm on my way to a show. Look, all my jewelry I have to sell on Shabbat. The show is on Shabbat. Just allow me to sell, since I'm already on the way this Shabbat. And then I promise you I'll never be mechalel Shabbat in my whole life. It's a very good offer, no? No, last Shabbat, let's close my eyes. He becomes tzaddik, no problem. The Chafetz Chaim told him, if I was Hashem, I had permission to do whatever I want with my Shabbat. I made it, I own it. And I am not the owner of Shabbat. How can I give you permission to violate 1 second of Shabbat, not the whole Shabbat? Who am I to give you permission? I'm the master of Shabbat. The master of universe made a covenant with the Jewish nation. Who am I to modify it and to change it? I'm going to make a change on Shabbat? How do you expect this? And that's what made the guy understand even better. That, forget it, Shabbat is not open for negotiation, for business. There are people in Israel, in Yerushalayim, in Bar Ilan Street. If you ever go to Yerushalayim, go to Bar Ilan in a Bukharian neighborhood. You see how they lay on the street. They lay on the street, they block the street, and they lay down, drive over me. But I won't let you drive here in this neighborhood on Shabbat. I know that, but this is level of people that they cannot sit home and enjoy the kiddush when they know other Jews is driving nearby. Yeah, it burns my heart. How can I enjoy keeping Shabbat knowing my brothers and sisters are driving to destruction, to eternal destruction? How? You know, when there's going to be a big war with the Arabs right now, do you know how many Jews will return back to Israel to fight? What do they need it for? They live in America. Private house, nice car, good job, wife, children. Many of them will get on a plane, free ticket. There will be hundreds of El Al planes. All of them return back to Israel, right? All you have to do is just come, present your passport, free ride to Israel. Why? A matter of life and death. Everybody understand. I don't help my nation today. Next year I won't have a place. I want to visit the Kotel. I want to do bar mitzvah to my son. I want to do to visit my grandma. Nothing. There's not going to be. What do you think? It's a joke? It's Israel is the size of New Jersey. Not talking here now, Egypt, big countries, Iran. It's huge. You destroyed a quarter of it. You still have a lot more to go. Over there, 2-3 hours messing up in a war. Nothing left. What do you think? 2-3 hours, the tank is driving all the way. It's already in Tel Aviv. A plane that takes... fly from Jordan, in 1.5 minutes he covers Israel. Go from Egypt, before he finished taking off, he's already in Tel Aviv. F-16. You know that or no? That's what it is, because before we used to have Sinai. Sinai was bigger than whole Israel. We gave it back to Egypt, and now you see what's going on. As soon as they take off from Cairo, or Alexandria, or next to Gaza there, as soon as he takes off, he's in the middle of Tel Aviv already. Before he finished moving his hand, taking off, right there, he's in Tel Aviv. From all over. So, only a fool doesn't see that up to now, there was one miracle after the other, trillions of miracles every second that we survived 60 years with all these wolves around us. It's not only the Arabs around us. The whole world is against us, undercover, under the ground. Weapon, this, politics, United Nations. It's all everyone against us. Don't ever think that someone is for us. Don't buy the nonsense you read on the news. Everyone is against us. And this is the way Hashem wants it. Don't be upset with this. Good. If they would love us, not one Jew would left. If the Gentiles, the nations would love us, you wouldn't have one Jew left from intermarriage. One Jew wouldn't left. Why? Everywhere they welcome him. Come, the son of God. Come, be our leader. Come, we welcome you to our family. Very nice. Everywhere I go, they bow down to me. They appreciate me. They read about me in the Torah. Very good. Why can't I marry Christine? Such nice people. Beautiful, rich. PhD, Harvard. Very good. You don't have to worry. You know? If now... you see, everybody knows the situation, the anti-Semitism, and more than 60, 70% of our brothers and sisters. You know, every day you have more than 30 weddings in America between Israelis to Goyim. Every night. Every night. Just Israelis. I don't know the American statistic. If you add that, it probably can be 70, 80. Every night, take 70 families and put them in complete... eternal death, complete. That's why the children are not Jewish, finish. Get cut out of Hashem's nation. Just from deciding to marry her because of her beautiful green eyes. There's a heavy price to pay for these green eyes. Or for the nice sport car. You understand? Then they wonder, why did I send my kids to this college? So I want to tell you two messages. First, everyone who his parents are forcing him to go to college. Most parents send their kids to college for their own ego. They want to show off in the family, to the father, to the brother, to the neighbors, to the friends. They don't really care what's going to come out of them, as long as they be wealthy. If the father still wants his son to go to the college, even he's a billionaire. Well, he can put him in business, he's going to make $10,000 a day, his son, age 19. It's no problem. He has enough money to support him just from the interest he make for the rest of his life. He doesn't have to worry. And he still insists to send his son to a good college that he can show off. My son is a doctor. My son is a lawyer. My son is this. My son is that. It's all a show off for him and his wife. Even the Italian mafias, they send their kids to college. If they drop out of college, they hear from their parents big time. Because a mafia guy doesn't want his son to be like him. And a robber doesn't want his son to be like him. And a hitman doesn't want his son to be like him. You understand? They want them to be supposedly educated. So everyone who his parents put pressure on him to get a college degree, come to me. I'll get you a college degree, sitting in yeshiva 3 years, learning from morning to night, Torah all day. You'll get college degree. 90%, 90 points from the 120 that you need for the master degree you have right there. The extra 30, you're going to go on 5 courses, which one of them is foreign language, so you can speak Russian or Hebrew, right away you have that. Science, some math, mamash, 2 or 3 courses you do, in two months after the learning, you have a master degree and you become a Talmid Chacham. And how much is going to cost you? $4,000 a year, $2,000 per semester, the cheapest more than any college in America. All you have to do is sit and learn Torah. Very good, no? Don't have to schlep, fly, taking flights, trains, living in the dorms, nothing. You can come back home. If you want to live there, fine, they'll find you a dorm, no problem. So you pay a little more. So that's one thing. Second thing, many people come to me and say, you know, what job can I find? I can't find any job. To finish college, I can't. To find a job, I can't. What's going to be? What business is good now? Retail is good? Horrible. Stock market is good? Expect a crash any minute. It's a big balloon. Jewelry is good. Any materialistic luxury now, it's very risky now. Who buys it? Who buys it now? Maybe in China, in Hong Kong, yeah. But over here, who buys this? People are struggling just to pay the rent and the mortgages. Real estate is good. Not so good. Everything. It's even very difficult to get a mortgage. There's no more, no income. Everywhere you go, I hear people complaining, I cannot make a dollar. But I know one Jew that made a lot of money in the last 16 months. I can't say his name on the camera. He has a very good job. I know when you hear it first, you criticize it. It doesn't. I heard about these things. But I saw his paycheck. He makes a lot of money. Tens of thousands of dollars a month. 16 months ago, he came to me crying. He doesn't have money to put food on the table. That's his situation was. And today, he's already becoming a wealthy man. And he's growing by the minute. If anybody that you know doesn't have a job and they struggle and they depress and sleep in bed, maybe it's time to send him to make money. Because I get every hour, you have a job for me? You know anyone? Like I became the United States government. So to save me this headache, if you don't have a job, nothing is good. I'm telling you, nothing. I speak to so many people from different fields. I get information from them. Nothing right now is good. No business is good. No retail is good. Maybe buying gold, it's still good because nobody has money, so they will come to sell their gold. Buying gold, no, fine. But other than that, everything is a big risk. You can count on one hand how many things are good right now for the future, with the future of this country. Anyone you know that is desperate, looking for a job, send him to me. Otherwise, please don't call me for jobs because I don't have any other offers. I don't have. Why are you wasting your time? I don't have what to offer you. Nothing. I cannot offer you a grocery store. I cannot not offer you a pizza store. Even those stores going out of business. I see everywhere I go. Everywhere I go. You know, to be a lawyer, to become a lawyer, who says good? You know how much you're going to have to pay until finally you're going to pay your student loans? You know how much they pay beginners, lawyers now? Less than $50,000 a year. a cab driver, illegal cab driver that stand by the airport, cab, make double. Yeah, this Russian that came from Russia 2 months ago, stand in Kennedy Airport, sir, I'm a $50 from here to Queens, I don't know, from here to Bronx. 50, 100, 30, he makes $200 a day. I promise you, lawyers first 2-3 years, they don't make it. They don't make this. Take after all their expenses, they have nothing. They have to live with their parents 4 or 5 years after becoming lawyers. So what, doctors? If you're a genius, like the doctor tomorrow is the best in the world, yeah, he makes fortune, yes. But how many like this you have? For everyone like this, you have 100 that hardly pay their bills. So what's the point? Two things, emunah, and hoping that Hashem will save us. Bezrat Hashem, we'll see you next Wednesday. This coming Wednesday, I'm speaking on 77th Avenue. 77th Avenue on Main Street in Noel Sara Synagogue. It's a beautiful lecture series about the Talmud. We cover the whole Talmud, lots of interesting topics from the Gemara. Starting 8:30, finishing at 10. And then every Wednesday, every Monday here. Everyone who can fast for that boy tomorrow, Zohar, Mordechai, Ben Roni, even half a day, until 1 o'clock, better than nothing. Because maybe all of us together can turn the verdict against him to positive. We don't know. We can be the reason that he got saved. An extra Jew, everything turned to the positive. If you care for other Jews, try to do it tomorrow. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.